We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finn, and we've got a show for you today. We are, this week, this half hour of the show, we will be featuring a rebroadcast with Ryan Hertz, who is the director of Lighthouse. It's an organization here in Southeast Michigan that helps with homelessness. It was a very poignant interview, and I feel like being poignant because in the second half hour of the show, we'll be starting the Bible all over again. We're at Genesis 1:1, and we'll be talking about some of the insights into the Genesis, especially with light of what's been happening around, out, and about in the world. We've got wonderful music sprinkled throughout the show. We've got a dynamic Hasidic story at the end. And before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. A 19-year-old Palestinian terrorist from Hebron tried to stab an Israeli police officer. The attacker was subdued and taken into custody. No one was hurt. The European Union, Egypt, and Jordan said they will no longer be sending financial aid to the Palestinian Authority until the PA accepts $750 million collected by Israel for the PA. That's taxes collected in tariffs and whatnot that Israel collects on their behalf. The PA President Mahmoud Abbas has refused collected taxes way back in May, citing a lack of fairness on the part of the Israelis. Chevron, the world's second largest oil company, purchased Israel's Noble Gas Company. Noble holds title to the energy fields on the off the coast of Israel. Chevron must now get the gas out of the ground. Israel, listen to this one. Israel is banning the buying and selling of furs. The ban does not include religious garb. Israel becomes the first country to ban fur trading. And anti-Semitic incidences around the world, a Jewish student was hit in the head with a shovel and remains in serious condition after an attack outside a synagogue in Hamburg, Germany. The attacker was held down by synagogue security people and was arrested and charged with a hate crime. A kosher restaurant in Paris was ransacked and anti-Semitic slogans were spray-painted on the walls. Police are looking for the perpetrators. And anti-Semitic graffiti was spray-painted on the fences of Jewish cemeteries in Athens, Greece, and Berlin, Germany. And finally, this year's Jewish Nobel Prize winners are Harvey J. Alter and two others for the discovery of hepatitis C and its vaccine. That's for medicine. Andrea Ghez, whose father is Jewish, and Roger Penrose, Sir Roger Penrose, whose maternal grandmother is Jewish. That makes him 100% Jewish. One in physics with another person for discovering a black hole. Louise Gluck, whose father is Jewish, won for literature. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start. Er Schultzman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Mr. Ryan Hertz, who is the director of South Oakland Shelter, also known as SOH, which is quite appropriate for the organization, and soon to be director of Lighthouse in Oakland County as well. How are you doing, Brian? Ryan?
I'm doing terrific. How are you, Rabbi?
Good, thank God. I want to, first of all, give a tremendous sense of recognition, because I heard that your organization actually saved people's lives this last week during that major cold.
Yeah, well, there's some truth to that. It was definitely a team effort of many different organizations. So every year, HUD actually mandates that each county conducts a point-in-time count on one night a year to try to get a handle on the distribution and quantity of people experiencing homelessness across the country. And they try to do it all in the same time period so that they're not double counting people. And they try to do it in the winter so that most of those people are easier to count because they're in a shelter or in a warming center. And so ours happened to fall during this polar vortex, unfortunately. And actually, Oakland County was the only county, I believe, in the entire state that didn't cancel their point-in-time count. And so our organization that coordinates the point-in-time count is called the Alliance for Housing. And I'm actually the chair of the board for that organization. And the executive director called me the day before and said, I don't want to cancel. Everyone's canceling, but I don't want to cancel. What if we actually found somebody? You know, God forbid somebody was actually outside and we have these volunteers ready to go looking for people. What if we actually found someone and were able to save them from the cold? And, you know, my worry was the safety of the volunteers, but I said, you know, if that's what your gut tells you, let's do it. And we were lucky, you know, two of the volunteer groups identified two individuals who were actually unsheltered in that weather on Wednesday night. And the Lighthouse of Oakland County, one of the two organizations I'm currently directing, had a van ready to go so that if a volunteer found somebody, they could call the van and the van would come and pick them up with supplies and help get them to a shelter while the group of volunteers continued their count. And, yeah, we were able to save two people, fortunately, thank God, on Wednesday night.
That's pretty amazing. That's like a little bit of the hand of the providence, as we might say. Let's go back a little bit. It seems one of the questions that I hear people is, why is somebody homeless? It's like there are three basic things that people need. They need air, and they need sustenance, and they need shelter. And so it's like a normal thing for people to be breathing, eating. What's going on that these people are lacking a place to live?
Sure. So it's a complicated question.
We got time.
If you look at it, well, is that we have time?
We have time.
We do. Okay. So we look at this kind of from two perspectives, right? So there's the kind of the person focus perspective, which is what are the specific barriers that that person or that household is experiencing, or the events that perhaps, that perhaps led to them experiencing a housing crisis in the first place. And then we look at sort of more broadly, what are the community and system issues that would allow somebody who experiences those types of barriers end up falling into homelessness, right? So an example of that might be, you know, the causal agent for the individual could be a mental health situation, or it could be, you know, a serious medical situation, and they have to choose between, you know, their medical costs and then their rent or something along those lines. So it could be something that, you know, is an explanation from the individual point of view for why they weren't able to meet their rent. But that doesn't necessarily explain why we're in a community where there are people who, when something like that happens, there isn't really a safety net to ensure that they don't lose their home, right? So there's the circumstances of the person, and then there's the community environment in which those circumstances actually lead to a person, losing their home and potentially ending up having to go unsheltered. depending on where they are and the number of people who may be homeless at that time. So we try to focus on both in our organization. We obviously, when we're working with an individual who lives in the community as it is, we can't transform everything all at once. And people are homeless. People are losing their home. You know, we're talking about over 3,000 people at any given time in Oakland County, you know, more than 20,000 in Southeast Michigan who are homeless. So it's obviously happening. And so from that perspective, we want to be set up to respond to their emergency in the moment. So if somebody's unsheltered, they don't have a place to go. We need to have a shelter for them to go to. It would be inhumane for us to ignore that. And at the same time, it's our responsibility to look at, you know, I think it might be a midrash, actually. You could probably, you'll probably be able to tell me if I'm right about that. The story, a few Jews are sitting next to the Nile pulling babies out of the river, and somebody says we should walk up the river and go see who's throwing these babies in the river instead of just sitting here continuously pulling these babies out of the river. So we try to think about it from that perspective that, you know, yes, we're here, and yes, we have a shelter, and yes, we have programs to help people get out of our shelter into housing, and we have very high successful outcomes, et cetera. But we also have to ask ourselves the question of why do we even need to be providing emergency shelter, and what can we do to advocate for the conditions in a community where people of all economic backgrounds are able to weather what are natural and normal economic crises without necessarily becoming completely destitute and losing their home. Okay. So we try to work on both sides.
That would involve a overhaul of our entire society, would it not, Ryan Hertz of South Oakland Shelter?
You could look at it that way, but there are pressure points that are less challenging than, say, some kind of a revolution of our economic system, right? So we already have, our predominant operating economic mode essentially creates situations where, our businesses are driven to profitability and require lower income workers in order to make their economic model work. So either, you'll either have the business community advocating for a lower minimum wage in order to make that work, or taking their, certain parts of their production, et cetera, out of the area to lower income areas, or in many cases, lower income countries. So you have sort of this aspect of our economy that requires some force of lower income labor. And at the same time, those people have to live somewhere and have some semblance of a decent quality of life. And so, it's true that you could look at this problem in this very sort of grandiose way, but there's also simpler ways to look at it. If you think about it from a local level, you can look at Oakland County and you can see that, when we provide rental assistance programs for people and we're looking for affordable rents, the places where you can find, what HUD would consider fair market rents are really densely in specific lower income areas. And so, we live in a situation where a lot of people are living predominantly surrounded by people of the same economic status. And what that leads to is that there's less of a tax base around our lower income people. So their children are not accessing the same sort of amenities when it comes to the public school system, the same sort of amenities when it comes to public safety, when it comes to proximity to jobs, proximity to opportunity. And so one of the levers that we're really focused on is housing affordability. And that's to say that, without necessarily overhauling our entire economic system and society, if we can find ways to develop affordable living situations integrated throughout our community instead of isolating lower-income people, we address a lot of the problems that our families face. So, for example, in Oakland County, for every 100 households that are at or below 30% of Oakland County's area median income, which is a fairly high area median income. So low income relative to our community, but not necessarily relative to other communities. There's only 24 affordable and available rental units, which equates to about a 20,000 unit gap of units that we need that are at the rental level that would be, say, 30% of the income of a lower-income household. So what that means is we have 20,000 families in our community that aren't necessarily homeless, but are paying a very high percentage of their income to their rent, which leaves them vulnerable. So we, you know, we could look at totally overhauling our society. That's one option. But another option, if we want to address simply this issue of housing crisis, is to just look at housing affordability and say, we know we need affordable units because we need people who work at a level that they can only afford these affordable units. Where do we produce them? How do we produce them? And do we produce them in a way that allows those people to have access to jobs, access to amenities, access to decent education? And through that access, they're more stable. And the fact that they're able to live in those in those communities and still be able to afford it. And that's the key issue. Is a lot of people who are lower income will move into communities they can't really afford in order to access those amenities because they are choosing between, say, the quality of education of their children and the affordability of their housing unit. And that's not really a fair question to put in front of a parent. And so oftentimes these crises happen because of these impossible choices.
Okay.
If we can focus on affordability.
Let me interrupt you just a second. Our guest today is Ryan Hertz, who is the director of South Oakland Shelter. And can we call it the director of Lighthouse too?
Yeah, I'm the acting CEO at Lighthouse as of this month.
Okay. And the two organizations are merging together?
We are. We're working on it as we speak.
And you're going to have to come up with a really cute name to put the two together.
It'll be adorable.
Yeah. Something warm and fuzzy to keep all those warm and fuzzy people. Now, we are talking about homelessness. So what you're suggesting is not that there'd be an overhaul of society. You're talking about an overhaul of people's moral values, because as soon as you started talking about this, I'm thinking NIMBY, not in my backyard. I don't want low-income happen. I worked up and I live in this neighborhood, and I came to this neighborhood because I can afford this neighborhood. And I don't want low-income housing in my neighborhood, Ryan Hertz.
I have great news for you.
Go ahead.
I have great news for you. And the news is it's not necessarily an overhaul of values. It's just an education on – because most of the same people who say, I earned my living to be able to live in this place and not have to put up with people who for whatever reason this attitude of, having to put up with people who haven't maybe accomplished what I've accomplished. Those same people, I think, recognize and desire the amenities that are availed to us by virtue of economic adversity, right? So the same person who lives in that neighborhood still wants to be able to go into a Meijer and get inexpensive produce and be able to shop and go to, the store at the corner and have somebody who's consistently able to serve them at the register, and they don't necessarily want that person to be experiencing immeasurable stress in their lives outside of that, or to be essentially experiencing what are intolerable living conditions, or to have to travel an absurd distance to get to that location to simply serve them, right? So the same people who want all of those amenities, I think if they were to understand the significance and the impact of the lack of affordability on our business community and on our economic success in our community, I think that people would think about that issue differently. I think that there's a pro-business case for housing affordability that we need to make, and we need to make it louder. We haven't done a good job of that. For every high-income job we add to our economy, we're adding 5 or 6 low-to-mid-income households to our economy as well to support that high income job. And all of those people have to go somewhere to sleep at night, and all those people have to send their children to school somewhere. And I think everyone understands that. I think that it's just helping people better understand the negative impact of not addressing affordability. So I would agree with you, though, that a lot of the work is around advocacy and education. And I'm not saying that I'm against an overhaul of our social system. I think that there's a lot of things that we could do better. But I don't think that the solution when it comes to things like homelessness and housing instability needs to be so dramatic. I think it can be as simple as educating on a case-by-case situation on a municipality-by-municipality basis on the value of being friendly to housing for people of all economic backgrounds.
Okay, very interesting. You got your work cut up for you, Ryan. So let's take us through a little bit. let's take, you're gainfully employed for a while. I can see that. Let's take us through a little bit. I mean, the thing that interests and fascinates me is back during the Engler administration, mental health facilities closed in mass. He did this as a way of maintaining the budget. And then all these people who had been corralled, for a lack of a better word, off, you know, and thereby received their homes, were in institutions, were now finding themselves on the street. And then you get, basically, they landed in your lap. So what do you do then with a person who is suffering from mental illness? To your goal at South Oakland Shelter is to make this person self-sufficient and not be a ward of just another organization.
Sure. Well, that's partially true. So when we look at the population that presents themselves to an emergency shelter, at least in the case of our shelter, we're talking about sort of the 80-20 rule sort of applies here, which is that about 20% of the population are the more acute situations of people who we would label chronically homeless. So people with severe disabilities, often mental health, substance abuse co-occurring, but certainly mental health is prevalent. Mental health issues are prevalent. And we're talking about that 20% of that of the homeless population costs us about 80% of the resources that we put in to responding to homelessness, because it's a more acute situation, but also because it's actually where we get the best bang for our buck. And what I mean by that is that while there is a moral imperative to respond to homelessness, there's also an economic argument here. Yes, there's an economic argument to affordability, but even more fundamentally, there's an economic argument to simply paying someone's rent as being a less expensive response than leaving somebody on the street. So when you look at the cost to a society of having people who are experiencing mental illness living in your community without basic supports, the economic externalities, the other economic impacts that are maybe less obvious than simply whether or not you're covering that person's rent, actually far outweigh the cost of that person's rent. So the cost of emergency room visits, the cost of policing, the added cost to the fire department, the added impact to property values and businesses in the area, et cetera, all these things far outweigh simply the cost of paying somebody's rent in an affordable unit and providing them even supportive services. So while it's true we want people to be as self-sufficient as possible, we also recognize that we have to account for the reality we live in, where people do experience severe disabilities that are completely incapacitating. And I think that when Engler closed the institutions that were to some degree addressing this problem, we certainly saw a larger number of people on the street, the percentage of people who were experiencing homelessness that were experiencing mental health issues. But we do have a solution for this. It's called permanent supportive housing. And essentially, the reality is everything that we would hope to do to help that person is less expensive after you pay their rent than if you don't pay their rent and you're failing at helping them because they're living in crisis and on the street. And so, we have a housing first program at SOS where when somebody's in our shelter, our goal is to get them into housing. And if they're, of the population that you were speaking of and are who we would consider to be chronically homeless, we have made the case and strongly believe in the case that it's less expensive to our society to pay that person's rent, get them into an apartment, provide them with supportive services. And, to the degree that they're able to overcome those barriers, fantastic. To the degree they're able to earn an income, terrific. And we always, ask that all of our clients at any of our programs commit 30% of their earned income towards their rent, and we subsidize the difference so that to the degree they're able, they're able to take on a portion of that. But we would never make the case that 100% of the people in our society could ever realistically be expected to completely earn their income through formal economic means. And I think most family units can understand that, that not everybody in a family can be the one out generating revenue. There's other jobs and there's other roles in our community. And for people who aren't a part of a family that's taking care of them, it's our responsibility as a community to respond to that. So I hope I answered your question.
You did indeed. So now we are now running out of time in this segment, but just Lighthouse and South Oakland Shelter recently merged, and generally the need for a merger of such organizations is to create a single organization which functions better than the two separate organizations. So you now, as director of both organizations, which are really now just, I can say you're the director of this organization. What changes do you see, and how is this Lighthouse / South Oakland Shelter going to be a better organization, Ryan Hertz?
Sure. So most of the questions that we've discussed so far have been really as related to SOS's sort of core programs around homelessness. Lighthouse has been around even longer than SOS. If you combine our organizations, we've been serving the community for 75 years together. And we both serve a similar population post-crisis, right? So somebody might come to SOS because they're having this housing crisis. Somebody might come to Lighthouse to access their food pantry because they're having a crisis of being able to, maybe they made the choice, they paid their rent, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they have the resources to cover the rest of their family expenses. At Lighthouse, they have a different set of basic needs services. Although some of them are related to housing, such as utility assistance and assistance to prevent evictions and things like this. And then on the other side, we both are very much committed to helping people do their best to move towards self-sufficiency or whatever stability might look like for that household, depending on their situation. So what it means by us coming together is a broader set of resources to respond to people's emergency basic needs. A broader set of resources when it comes to addressing people's individual journeys towards stability, as well as a broader set of resources around addressing systemic issues like housing affordability, like transportation, like access to food and food security. So, we look at our two organizations and say, separately, we're addressing pieces of the puzzle when it comes to poverty and economic disparity. And together we can do more for more people across a broader geography. I mean, between the two organizations, we're developing housing, and you're probably where we're developing a 64-unit apartment building in Oak Park, an affordable apartment building. It's going to be beautiful, and it's going to be something that I think the whole community will be proud of. Lighthouse has 70 units and four different buildings under management that are also affordable and transitional housing that'll be a part of that portfolio. We have some single family homes in the Pontiac area. And so together, all of these resources can be directed around a common strategy to respond to poverty across a broader geography. So that's our hope and our dream. And we hope we do better together than we'd be able to do separately.
Okay. Our guest, that's going to wrap it up for us. Our guest today has been Ryan Hertz, director of Lighthouse SOS South Oakland Shelter. We want to thank you so much and wish you continued success, and hopefully the winter will take a little bit of break for you guys and make your life a little easier, and keep us apprised of what's going on.
It certainly will. Thank you so much for having me as a guest.
It is our pleasure. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Some things are better the way they used to be, like the crisp feel of a cool autumn day, the serenity of a baby sleeping, or the feeling of coming home after a long trip. Franklin Cider Mills makes cider the way cider is supposed to be. Its old-fashioned, clear, crisp taste reminds you of a cool autumn day. Located in the heart of historic Franklin Village at 14 Mile and Franklin Road, Franklin Cider Mill has been making cider the same way for over a century. Always fresh, with no additives or preservatives. You just can't buy Franklin Cider in any supermarket. Franklin Cider Mill is open from Labor Day weekend to after Thanksgiving from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Come visit Franklin Cider Mill. It's kind of like coming home.
Herschel Spinman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Let me get out of the way and just listen to some music. This is Yishai Reboy. We've played him before. This is called New Piece, Sheket, Silent.
בין קינה לעצות, בין הפחד, בין הלבד לבין היחד, מנסה למצוא תשובות.
בין קריאות לכאב, בין השפל, בין חוסר השפיות לשכל, מבקש לי פתרונות.
בין מטר של כישלונות לבין אכזבה, בין אור להעלת הלב צועק די לשלכת, הלב צמא לאהבה.
לילה ומיטה קרה רועד, לילה שהזמן עצר מלכת, שקט מחריש את האוזניים, לא מוצא דבר שנחם. אוכל לרדת
ישי ריבו
בין אולי לכמעט, בין בערך, בלי תמורים שיסמנו לי את הדרך, מנסה למצוא מקום.
בין רוחות של תקווה לבין אשליה, הלב אינו נכנע, אף פעם לא מרים ידיים, הלב זקוק לאהבה.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Spinman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Up next, this is Avram Fried, has a new song. He's becoming really prolific. I mean, like he was not prolific before. But he's coming out with new songs, like, I don't know, daily at this point. This one is called Ula Yerachim. It is taken from the liturgy from Yom Kippur. I know we're done with Yom Kippur. We're well on the way. We're at the point where we're out into the world, and Tishrei is one of those things which is in the past. But it says you take what you gain from Tishrei and you take it with you for the whole year. So this is Avram Fried.
שייני כדאי והוגון לך ויחפה בי שייני כדאי והוגון לך
Why go anywhere else when you could go to One Stop Kosher? Located on Greenfield Road, just south of 696, you're never far from One Stop Kosher. At One Stop Kosher, you'll find the largest selection of kosher wines in Michigan. One Stop Kosher has the freshest produce, the best dairy, deli, and meats. They're gourmet. They even have a kosher bakery right on the premise. It's One Stop Kosher on Greenfield Road in 696 for all your shopping needs.
Herschel Finner here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Up next, this is Chabad Classics, Moroccan Style.
We all know there's an opiate epidemic, but Advanced Rapid Detox has a solution for people addicted to pain pills, heroin, and dependent on Suboxone and methadone. Advanced Rapid Detox performs detox under sedation in the hospital. Patients sleep through withdrawals and wake up without cravings. Dr. Julia Aronoff and the staff at Advanced Rapid Detox help people restore their lives and the lives of their families. Addiction affects everyone, even in the Jewish community, and Advanced Rapid Detox is there to help. Call 800-603-1813. That's 800-603-1813, or visit them online at www.advancedrapiddetox.com.
Herschel Finman here, you're listening to the Jewish Hour. We reported in the news that Sir Roger Penrose received the Nobel Prize for Physics for his discovering a black hole together with Andre Ghez. One of the interesting things that Roger Penrose said was that what's at the center of a black hole is nothing, which this is totally and completely baffling, which is was so unbelievable that they were able to come up to it with such a conclusion, because it's the idea being, it's very hard to explain, on a blackboard it takes up like a whole wall of equations to show what it is that it's talking about. It's only because of Einstein's work in general relativity that we could even come up with such an idea. So the idea of the Big Bang, which was, I believe, purported by Stephen Hawking, he was one who came with the idea there must be something on the other side of black holes going out the other way. So the Big Bang is this idea that there was this tremendous infinite mass, and then the energy just was too much for it to be contained, and it exploded and shot matter all throughout the entire universe, and that's how the universe began. But there's always the problem of, well, how did the matter get there, and what caused it to suddenly bang? So you have to go back to this. You have to tie in quantum mechanics. This is not a show on physics. This is a show on the Jewish Hour. Looking at the beginning of the Bible, Genesis 1:1, what happened? So the first thing that happens in Genesis 1:1, it says, in the beginning. So what that means is that at some point there was a start. Before that, there was no beginning. So you can translate in the beginning when God's creating the heavens. You could say when it began to have a creation, or when God began creating the creation. There are those translations that actually translate the beginning of the Bible of God in the beginning of his creation, so that we have the God thing first. So it's recognized that what existed before the creation was the nothingness, which was the totality of the Almighty. We call it nothing. But there is no such thing as nothing. And I don't know if Sir Penrose would ever really come up with, well, what is this nothing of which you speak? Because when we talk about nothing, how big is a nothing? We can't draw a picture of nothing. It just is not going to happen. Because there is no limitations on nothing. Nothing is infinite, and infinite is also nothing. As we say, what can contain infinity? Nothing. So the start of the creation is finally scientists are catching up and understanding that there has to be, the creation has to have been ex nihilo. Ex nihilo is Latin for formerly nothing. And the physicists are saying that was some kind of a quantum anomaly, which means it happened. That's all that means. Put into simple English, there was nothing, And then something happened, and now there's something. And that's where they've gotten to at this point. That's the best that they can do. But at least they're recognizing that there was a different sort of existence before energy and matter and time and place. This is all very fun. Okay? I love saying what can contain infinity, nothing. Okay? So, but that's not just a random statement. The Torah is, and we'll probably say this probably almost every week this year, the Torah is not a history book. And God forbid to say it's a book of Jewish trivia. So in case you ever play Jewish Trivial Pursuit, you can ask, you'll know, what was created on the third day. You know, it's just, no. Every concept, every word, every letter, and indeed every part of every letter is a lesson for us. That's what the Torah is. It's the way in which God conveys his will and wisdom. Want to know what God wants? Want to know what God's thinking? Yeah, we got the manual. It's called the Torah. So when we make this very glib statement of what contains infinity, nothing, what that is, that's a very profound lesson for us. A person who says, I can do things myself. I don't need anybody's help. God says, okay, you're on your own. See how it works. It's only when a person makes themselves nothing, when a person drops the ego, drops the arrogance, and turns themselves into this nothing. Now, nothing doesn't mean you make yourself into a shmata and let everybody trample all over you. A shmata is an old rag. No, because what am I doing? I'm conveying infinity. And how do we do that? Well, hit the books. That's what the Torah is all about. Understand the nothingness behind the totality of everything. And you too will be able to contain infinity. Infinity is good, but the show's only so long. We've got to take one more commercial break, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. We got the Hasidic story coming up next. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Hi, this is Specs Howard. The Specs Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Go to my website, rabbifinman.com. There's all kinds of good things at rabbifinman.com. You'll find a way to contact me. You'll find archive editions of the show. You'll find other ways in which we convey Judaism in an entertaining and an interesting way. And something which will benefit everybody, a win-win situation for all, is the donations page. The donations page is absolutely necessary because we are totally and completely dependent on listeners like you helping us to keep the show on the air. It's been that way since day one 25 years ago, and it's still that way. So go to RabbiFinman.com, go to the donations page, help us out, keep us on the air. We're doing good till now. We'll continue to do good. I have full faith in the Almighty and trust that you'll do the same. Hasidic story involves Reb Shmelka of Nicholsburg, who was a very prominent Hasidic rabbi. I heard this story many years ago from Yerachmiel Tillis, who has a website, a storytelling website. We've had him on the show. He's written numerous books of stories that he's authenticated. And this one has an interesting tale at the end of it. I guess tale is T-A-L-E-N-T-A-I-L is the way this is spelled. Reb Shmelka was very meticulous that he would never say a blessing unless someone was standing nearby who could respond, Amen. And it once happened that he was traveling from point A to point B, and as the case may be, he told the wagon driver, please stop, he needed to relieve himself. Now, there is a blessing which is said for someone when they go to the bathroom. It's thanking God for making all the channels and pipes work properly. It's a very important blessing. But he didn't want to say it because there was nobody around. He was in the middle of no place. Suddenly, he saw two people. And he ran over to them, recognized, of course, they were Jewish, and said the blessing. They said Amen. And then he turned, he like closed his eyes, and then like, for a second, they disappeared. So he reckoned that those two people that he saw must have been the angels Gabriel and Raphael. Raphael for healing, and Gabriel's the ministering angel for the Jewish people. And they had been sent because of his meticulousness in wanting people to say Amen. Okay, that's the story of Reb Shmelka, but Rabbi Yerachmiel Tillis adds, Tony, if you could bring up the music behind me, please. He was walking through the streets of Tzfat on his way home from Mincha, and as it happened, he went in an unusual way because he got so involved with what he was doing that he didn't go to his regular synagogue. He had to go to a different synagogue where they prayed the afternoon prayers later, and on his way back, so he encountered somebody, this is many years ago, he encountered somebody, and the person came walking to him. The person stopped when he caught eye, and this person, the stranger, put his arm on Rabbi Tillis's arm, and he began saying the blessing of Asher Yatzar, the blessing for going to the bathroom. And when he finished, Rachmiel said a resounding Amen. And this is right after, and I mean, they went on their way. And this trailer happened right after Rabbi Tillis came across this story. Interesting ending. That's going to do it. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you're back into swing of things. This Shabbos Brachos, as it says this Saturday, that Shabbos, that Vimen Shteltzuk Shabbos Brachos, Sirtman Agansia, the way one conducts oneself on the first Shabbos of the year, Shabbos Brachos, the beginning when we're reading Genesis 1:1, is an indication how things will go for the entire year. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.